This land is yours. You must protect it. It won't be yours long if you don't protect it. If necessary, with your lives, and your children with their lives. Don't discount your enemies. They will be back. And if your house is burned, build it again. If your corn is destroyed, replant. If your children die, bear more. If they drive you out of the valley, live on the sides of the mountain, but live. You will always look for leaders, strong men without faults. There aren't any. There are only men like yourselves. They change. They desert. They die. There are no leaders but yourselves. That strong people is the only lasting strength.
You're ripping me off, and I didn't deserve it because I didn't do nothing wrong. Your body set down pipeline driveway. Don't force get someone in the 40 miles or whatever it is. I never saw the sign. I saw it 55, and I was doing 57. That's all I know. Now, just give me the damn thing, and I'll look at the date. If I'm working, I'll pay the fine because I can't afford to take a day off. And if I'm not working, I'll plead not guilty because I know well I'm not guilty. There. Now, are you a state or local? Looks like you're a state trooper. Get back and pick up some more guys and run up the deficit on the working man. Just give me the damn thing. Let me get out of here.
What I need you to do is sign the X so I can explain this to you.
There ain't no explaining. I got picked up for speeding before. You're guilty and you paid the fine and hope your insurance don't go up. And you try not to speed the next time. And that's what I've been trying to do for 4 or 5 years, and it's worth damn good. Do I run into you, you a**?
Green copy's for your record, sir.
I don't... All right.
White copy needs to be mailed in within 20 days.
Okay.
Read the back of this hard copy. This will explain how you can have a trial if you want. On the back, that will explain it. Attach is an envelope. See? Put a stamp on that, you mail that in.
They'll
tell you what to do.
Yeah, I can afford the stamp.
The fine's right here, sir. It's $137.50.
You're crazy! I get it! You're crazy! My wife took money out of her damn account where she's working to pay my insurance so I wouldn't get picked up. You're crazy!
If you don't pick this up, sir, I'm going to summon you for littering.
I guess he told him off, man. A day in the life of a public servant out on the highway trying to keep you safe, man. Well, it's into February 5th, February 5th, 2016. And it's a beautiful day here today. We got lots of sun and everything and no rain, but it's cool. But it's okay. The sun's shining. The birds are chirping. And we are at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. You know, that reminds me, number one, we've got we're getting our website put back together, so stand by. It's going to be beautiful. Last night I caught a movie that I think I've seen before, but it was about the world's most radical hacker. I think his name was Ken. His last name was Mitnick. And it's interesting that Mitnick really had him going for a long time, but he evidently never took for himself. He never cleaned out bank accounts for himself or anything like that. He did some time, but then he agreed to work for the feds, so he's working for the feds. Well, anyhow, I used to listen. He had a radio show on KFI in California, Los Angeles, and he gave you all the skinny on security and all that stuff on computers. And I used to listen to him all the time. In the film, I noticed one thing I never knew, that Kevin Mitnick's father was a big shot in the Jewish Defense League. How about that? Well, that's funny, because some of the pieces of his shows I edited out and put into my show. So in some of my shows way back several years, you'll hear Kevin Mitnick in there, who was the son of a guy that was big in the JDL. Boy, life is strange, man. Well, the first thing I want to do today is chase the spooks out from around. They try to sneak in here when I'm not looking, but I don't want to be disturbed on the weekend, so let's first of all get the spooks out of here. Say, hello, Ben Klassen. You had the whole ball of wax. And I notice on that new calendar that looks so nice, incidentally, I got a note from somebody that said, they said the man that put that together was not too nice a guy, but I'm not going to spread it around because I don't know. But the calendar looks good, so there you go. But Ben Klassen was not on it. Isn't it funny how people who believe in spooks in the sky can be narrow-minded and not give credit to people who don't believe in spooks in the sky, but people who believe in spooks in the sky can give credit and ceremony to people who do believe in spooks in the sky? I think that's, you know, because when I got out of the right wing and got out of Christianity in 1980, all of a sudden there's quite a number of people in the that believe in spooks in the sky turned their back on old Tommy. So I think sometimes the spooks in the sky is more important to these people than their race, and that disturbs me.
In saying that in my book I say that there's no reason at all to believe that the so-called Jesus of Nazareth ever existed, but here's what I say about Socrates. The original collision between our reasoning faculties and any form of organized faith, this is my book, though it must have occurred before in the minds of many, is probably exemplified in the trial of Socrates in 399 BC. It does not matter at all to me that we have no absolute certainty that Socrates even existed. The records of his life and his words are secondhand, almost but not quite as much as are the books of the Jewish and Christian Bible and the Hadiths of Islam. Philosophy, however, has no need of such demonstrations because it does not deal in revealed wisdom. Now, as it happens, we do have some very good descriptions of the life of Socrates that make his existence to me plausible, but it doesn't matter to me at all whether he was real or not. What matters is that someone advanced his method of reasoning, his testing of evidence against experience, his commitment to a certain kind of dialectical honesty. And that if it hadn't been him, it would have been someone else. So that's what's precious to me. And that he never said, you've got to believe in everything I say, or go to hell or heaven. Because, and here's why you've got to agree with me, because my mother never went to bed with anybody. And that proves the truth of what I say. I must have looked very dead when they took me down from the cross, but I didn't die. And that proves my point. I'm willing to grant it all. I'm willing to grant the Immaculate Conception first, then the Virgin Birth, then the Resurrection, and the Annunciation and the Assumption. I'm willing to grant all of it. It doesn't prove the truth of the proposition that you should take no thought for the morrow. The central doctrine of Jesus of Nazareth, take no thought for the morrow. No investment, no thrift, no care for your children, that you should abandon your family, not worry about construction, about investment, about anything. Just follow me. A ridiculous and immoral proposition that, as C.S. Lewis so cleverly, and I must say for him, very honestly puts it, means that the man must either have been a maniac, a sick man, an evil man, or he must have believed that the world was coming immediately to an end, and that he was commanded to announce this fact to the deluded Bronze Age inhabitants of Palestine. Because if he didn't believe that, if he didn't believe he was divinely mandated, then his words would not have been inaccurate or false. They would have been wicked. That's what you have to be talking about. Now, there is, on the historicity point, there are only two reasons, I think, to suppose that there may have been the figure of some kind of deluded rabbi present at that time. The first is the fakery of the story. The fakery itself proves something. The prophecy says this man must be born in the house of David, of David's line, in David's town. It means he must be born in Bethlehem. Jesus of Nazareth is well known to have been born in Nazareth. In order to get him to Bethlehem, a huge fabrication has to be undertaken. A census is proposed by Caesar Augustus. No such census ever took place. The people of the region were not required to go back to their hometown to be registered. That's never happened. Quirinius was not governor of Syria in that year, as the Gospels say. None of the story of the Nativity is true in any detail, and not one of the Gospels agrees with each other on this fabrication. But the fabrication itself suggests something. If they were simply going to make up the whole thing, and there'd never been any such person, then why not just have him born in Bethlehem right there and leave out the Nazarene business? So the very falsity of it, the very fanatical attempt to make it come right, suggests that, yes, there may have been a charismatic, deluded individual wandering around at that time. But which is most impressive to you? The fantastic fabrications, the unbelievably inane and inarticulate preachments, or the inconsistencies in the story? You could mention another thing about the resurrection. Most of the witnesses to this are women, illiterate, stupid, deluded, hysterical females, of the kind who in a Jewish court at that time would have had about as much chance of being listened to as they would in an Islamic court today. What religion that wants its fabrication to be believed is going to say, you've got to believe it, because we have some illiterate, hysterical girls who said they saw this? No, it's impressive to me. It's impressive to me that the evidence is so thin and is so hysterical and is so feeble and is so obviously, strenuously cobbled together, because it suggests that something was going on. There was some character. And I don't want to, therefore, to profane those who think that there must have been something and say, no, there was nothing. This is not a whole cloth fabrication, but it is a very human and very intelligible and very pitiable, I think, practice of fraud that may have worked on stupefied peasants in the greater Jerusalem area, but should really have no power to influence anyone in this room, whereas the noble methods and words and systems by which Socrates reasoned will continue to illuminate our path for as long as we care about the only real gift we have, which is our independent intelligence. Now, I think that'll do for now, but if you want to ask me, yes, I've run out of time, but if you would care just to look at the chapter I've written about the discovery, the concession now, by every Israeli archaeologist, by the whole school now of Israeli archaeology, that the entire story of the Exodus, the captivity, the wandering, the conquest of Canaan, and the rest of it, is also a complete fabrication. You will see a perfect collision between the two things that do allow us to make progress as scholars and intellectuals: the weighing of evidence against interest, and that the great school of Jewish archaeology, given every motive to find the contrary, giving every motive and every chance in the Sinai and in the region to dig up and find what David Ben-Gurion, at the founding of the state, called the title deeds of Zionism, to come back empty-handed and say, we admit it, this story has no basis of any kind whatever, is, I submit to you, something far more noble, far more worthwhile, far more honest, far more courageous, far more moral, and far more Socratic than any of the nonsense that Dinesh just tried to pass off on you. Thanks.
Well, now we got the spooks all out of here for a few days. Well, we'll go on with equally important information. Yeah. Well, how do you like the way the campaign's going, man? What a bunch of wackos. They're insane, man. All the children are insane. Because, well, actually, they're not. They're just mimicking and repeating bullshit that they've learned along the way, all the spooks and all the myths and all that kind of stuff. And they'll use it to get elected, because that's how you get the power and you get the money, is by all these Republicans swearing allegiance to the Lord Jesus Christ and all that kind of stuff. It's too bad that the Republican Party had to go down that route. Even a good share of our founding fathers didn't believe that. And they still try to put that stuff in their mouth, but they didn't really believe it, most of them. They were deists, and beyond that, they were less than that. I was going through my stacks of newspapers from way back. I got a tremendous amount of good stuff, and I've still got quite a few of those papers left, in case anybody wants some, because there are tremendous articles in there. In some ways, I wish I still published a newspaper, but it's out of the question at this time. But anyway, somebody sent me this way back, and I'm not sure what year, but it's at least 10 years old, maybe more than that, from Tommy, copyright 2007. Yeah, that's when it came. Some of this may really turn you off or turn you on, but I think it's very truthful. I got a lot of email concerning my stance in the article I wrote, When Retardation Comes Home to Roost. If I can dig that out, that article, I'll read that to you too. Towards the end of the article, I stated that during an uprising, Civil War type revolution, I would do nothing but watch and laugh. But the whole article should be taken into account. Though some of it is facetious and satire, my stance that I would not help others is steadfast. Here's my argument. White people have been our worst enemy. They have sold out others who were not of their same religious orientation. Whites are aligning with other races to help fight another race, such as whites linked with Arabs to fight against Jews. Why not your own kind instead? Probably because the Arabs have more backbone than whites. Whites will kiss up to other races while lambasting their own white heritage. Whites will rally alongside every law there is which strip us of our rights and liberties. Then they will network alongside any other race to bring them to America and legalize their citizen status. Whites are the employers who hire these third world slaves. Whites are gullible enough to fight in a military designed to be a Zionist war machine. Whites are willing to war against any other white nations without examining any facts whatsoever. Whites make the ghettos and bus in its occupants. This is the very brief list, but it gets my point across. Now, in Article 1, I wrote, I stated our only salvation for the white race would come from the invasion by Russia. Now, remember, this is at least 10 years ago. My logic here is not one of national interest, but one of tribe and race. Our country has been overrun by traitors. The infrastructure is too weary and broken to fix. It needs to be purged from within and from without. Our government intervening on our behalf will work. There's just too much internal damage. So to say we need Russia should alert you to my mindset. My white race has caused all the flip-flopping, denial, and servitude to all domestic and foreign enemies. Should an armed revolt overtake our continent, what should I do? We wouldn't be in this mess to start with if Whitey woke up. I should now risk my blood to defend cowards and traitors. I should leave my safe place to descend down the mountains to fight against the Russian invaders. See, this is before the Soviet collapse, too. Should I ask a white man amidst a war zone, quote, dude, did you vote for George Bush, unquote, before I think about it, if he is my enemy and I go to war against him? There's no uniform here to designate who's on whose side. We were supposed to have only our white skin as our common banner, but that theory is gone now. I should fight against savage races who are here only because white people rallied to get them here. So in this context and scenario, everyone is my enemy. I'm not sure how you envision your common scenario, whoever is left to survive once the first fires burn out and all the chaos settles, will then be sorted out as either enemy or brother. I'm certain, quite certain, then there would be another battle of religious and moral ethics. I do not see many people left after all the coming bloodshed. Leaders will be needed, and I, for one, don't want others contaminating infectious blood on me. I do know, because the prevalent psyche of the mass consciousness of white people, most will be killed out of their own sheer ignorance. This is nature's way of culling the thumbed-down eugenics of sheep. I'd like to view myself as one who can help restore some kind of sanity once all this ends, so it doesn't happen again. The strong and prepared will survive this scenario in suburban areas and mountaintop retreats and emerge as tribalists, trained and nonconforming, even though I believe America will be considered a third world nation once all the smoke clears. It reminds me of this Dawn of the Dead and all that kind of stuff. It develops into tribes, mostly white. They put a couple of blacks in there to get it by, because if they didn't, the opposition would immediately see what the writers were looking towards. Attitudes. This is the next part. Despite the fact that I personally don't like the looks of blacks or Hispanics or Arabs or Asians, it's their thought processes that offend me. I could tolerate anything in the looks department if they had it together. But the drastic difference between whites and all the other races is the fact that they lack our spirituality, our altruism, our compassion, our creativity, our integrity, and our ability to love. Self-sacrifice is an abstract to all of them, as well as true courage. Oh, there's a fanatic suicide bomber, but the vast majority of those are simply trying to escape a nightmare life of the Muslim repression and poverty. They won't out any way they can. They want out any way they can. You never see their leaders blowing themselves up. Most are mud racers. Most mud racers are cowards. Like when the liner Oceanus sank last year, the captain of the vessel, an Iranian, took the first lifeboat off the ship after announcing on the PA system for everyone to abandon ship. 1,500 people nearly lost their lives because only a few lifeboats were launched, due to the fact that the ship listed so severely that the remaining boats were stuck in their cradles. Two white passengers risked their lives to climb to the now towering radio shack as the ship's stern pointed skywards as it sank and signaled for help. Helicopters airlifted everyone off just in time because of the two white people. When interviewed, the captain said, "I told them to abandon ship. It was then up to them if they chose to stay or not. This is the mindset of a typical Arab. This is the mindset of a typical Hispanic and black as well. My late father had a very wise saying, the lower the form of life, the more concerned it is about its own ass. Just look at the rat and the cockroach. They'll drop everything and run over their brothers to get away from the threat. Just like the mud racers, this is a trait you'll find in lower animals. Whites, however, as a rule, will sacrifice their own lives to help others. They don't think about it, they just do it. This separates us from the animal kingdom, and only us. All the other races are, as a rule, incapable of this type of sacrifice. This is why during World War II, most American GIs refused to fight alongside blacks. My relatives told me stories of black soldiers tossing their rifles high into the air and beating feet away from the front lines as soon as the shooting started. Oh, the liberals have made up a lot of stories and embellished a lot of tales about their heroics. And though there have been a few isolated instances where some of them actually did the right thing, the vast majority of them were liable to their units. Many were fragged by white soldiers for cowardice during Vietnam, because they knew the civilian and military courts wouldn't do anything to them because they were black. Justice was meted out the only way it could be, at the end of a rifle. These aren't rumors, they're facts. Like all cowards, though, they are bullies. When they're in packs, they become cruel and brutal. Many a time when I was in the military, I did hear of a group of black soldiers stomp some poor white and get away with it. Blacks are even worse as civilians. They have only a few goals in their entire existence. Number one, crack and other drugs. Number two, white pussy. Number three, cars. Number four, easy money, not earned money. Five, flashy clothes. Six, harassing whites, their favorite hobby. And believe it or not, this about sums up their entire wish list in life. Education, spiritual growth, family responsibility, work, a career, contributing to society or civilization. Ha! Never happened. Hispanics aren't much better. They have no intelligence. They, like the blacks, breed like flies, regardless of their inability to provide for the kids they create. They steal, rape, kill, torture animals, a common cultural trait, bully, trash neighborhoods, and also have no higher goals in life other than the same ones the blacks have. Their bodies are awash in genetically high levels of testosterone, combined with an extremely low IQ and no education or ethical structure, and you have one violent and unpredictable race of people. Every week there's another revolution in South America. In any Latin senatorial session, it's common for legislators to break down into chair-throwing riots. This also happens in the Middle East. Stabbings, shooting, rapes, murder are as common as common cold is up here. And the more of them that immigrate here, the more violent our nation becomes. Hispanics are very emotional and easy to set off. Even their women are violent. They are totally incapable of governing themselves peacefully for any prolonged period of time. Blacks are the same way. Both are dangerous to us as a race and as a nation. Arabs are no better, with an insane and aggressive cult for a religion, no education, a very low IQ, and a genetically high testosterone level. Again, a recipe for disaster. Asians are intelligent as whites, not more so, as many liberals would have you believe. They simply push their kids to the breaking point to get good grades. But they also do not possess compassion, spirituality, altruism, and self-sacrifice. Asians are the most ruthless, animalistic soldiers we ever faced, torturing our boys with a cold, satanic glee that freezes the blood because of their sheer lack of humanity. They're extremely materialistic and racist, and hate all other races, especially whites. Asians are, as a rule, extremely jealous of whites, as are all the other mud races as well, and afraid of them. We have invented almost every invention worth note on the planet. TV, radio, microwaves, airplanes, jets, washers, dryers, computers, CD players, lasers, stealth, spaceflight, cars, music, books, architecture, philosophy, with the exception of Confucius, whose teachings were ignorant and twisted, in my opinion, modern mathematics and modern medicine, atomic power, and so on. You use it, and odds are white invented it. We are the fathers of civilization and technology. And like blacks, the Arabs and Hispanics, Asians breed like flies. This is a trait of the lower life form. Whites, on the other hand, barely increase. And this advanced trait is going to cause our extinction unless we kill off these vermin. Whites are the final, most advanced flower of the evolution of man. There once was a race of whites even more advanced than us, the Cro-Magnons. They had larger brains, were taller, more developed, and more handsome. But around 12,000 years ago, they were completely wiped out by marauding armies of mud racers that literally outbred them and then killed them and what they had out of jealousy. In a very scary parallel of today's Jews, they had an enemy group called the Dark Priests that orchestrated the mud races against the Cro-Magnons. There are ancient records that recount this history, and archaeological proof is abundant. We're repeating their mistake. They showed these animals compassion, and it cost them their very existence. So if we let the mud races win out, mankind will have sank backwards 5 million years into the quagmire of earlier evolution. All the beauty, the intelligence, the creativity, and the spirituality that is the white race will be gone, and gone forever. We will leave behind a warring, ignorant, stupid, ugly race of subhumans that will eventually die out, leaving the planet to the animals. This isn't conjecture, it's a fact. No matter how much you may want to argue with these facts I've written here, deep down you know I'm right. This is a well-thought-out, correct assessment of the current situation on this planet. We either go to war against these parasites and do it soon, or we start writing our obituary as a race. This is because without builders and maintainers of this world civilization, the technology, the mud races, will sink back into barbarism almost overnight. Mass starvation, death, disease, and war will run rampant, and the world quickly reverts back to chaos. Because one final thing you need to remember, they want us dead, all of us, and they intend on either breeding us out of existence through screwing the most ignorant and brainwashed of our women, or by direct murder. It's them or us, period. Yes, it's an ugly reality to face, but a true one, I'm sorry to say. Time for you and yours to do some very serious thinking. We are all responsible for the survival of our race. We can't leave it to the other responsible guy any longer. You are the other guy. Time to buy weapons and to teach your young the truth of it all before it starts, and it will. And soon. That's pretty, put it pretty straight, and that's what we ought to be thinking about instead of whether Trump is going to do the right thing. All these people are worthless pieces of crap, every one of them, and we shouldn't spend any time thinking about them, whether we want them as a president or not. I personally, I don't want a president at all. Presidents and congressmen and senators are killing our race. Why should we care about anything about them? They should all be tried and hung by the neck until dead. And not wasting too much rope either. This is what we should be talking about. Not like these right-wing conservative racialists and their funny little right-wing groups and so forth like that that combine politics, conservative politics and so forth, with the race issue, with accentuating the politics and not the race. Now, for those of you who think that we haven't had it and we're on our way out unless something happens, try calling in any radio station and giving your opinion on race straight out without watering it down to the point where it doesn't mean much. Try, like I do, to write letters to the newspaper. They'll never, ever take a letter that accentuates the survival of the white race. You'll never be on a radio station anymore to discuss the best interests of the white race, except on a really rare occasion, or television. At least back in the 70s and 80s, I got on TV a lot and was able to put out the word on the white race. I was able to lecture in high schools and even universities every year, but no more. You can't do it. You can't get in any place. You have no voice whatsoever, so you have no reason whatsoever to love the system or have patriotism towards it. You need to hate it. You need to hate it with every fiber of your soul. And for the most part, just sort of keep your mouth shut, because trying to talk to people around you about this, they'll turn on you and, like it says, and rend you. They're not your friend. They'll tolerate you as long as you talk about, you know, silly stuff, minor stuff, and debate over which politician's going to screw you the least. They'll talk all day about that stuff, but not too much. Most places you go into a bar or restaurant and you start talking even politics very heavy and they want to throw you out. So I want you to know that this is what's coming from me and what I believe and what many of you people believe. And that's it. And we're going to keep it going that way and keep accentuating that way, because no matter what happens, there's going to be a small percentage of ruthless pro-white killers evolve out of this, but not stupid types, not dumb types, not going to run around just knocking off non-whites on the street corner like they accused me of back in the day. No, it's got to be smart, intelligent, sneaky, wise, ruthless barbarians. You got that straight? Okay, well, that's the end of that particular sermon. This is a quote I made way back in 2007, I believe it was, or maybe before. Quote, "When we go to war, I will not ask the white racist next to me, what is he, Christian or atheist? I will only expect him or her to kill the enemy as I will." So there you go. You know, it's really good to go back in my old papers and read what I said. Tom Metzger, longtime racial activist and current spokesman for the North American Insurgency, released today the following. "After spending decades in the attempt to bring sanity to the invasion debate, I have concluded that big business, bought politicians, social Marxists, and even the churches have no intention of reversing the invasion and the cultural destruction, primarily of the white European Americans. It is a waste of time to debate the subject. The fix is in. I have been fighting this invasion since 1971 with minimal results. including runs for Congress and the U.S. Senate. It's time to say a tentative state of war now exists between the people who will stand and fight and the destructive forces that are in power at present. The oligarchs who rule over us must pay dearly. I do not care who you are, who you put into office of president, or who wins. It's far too late for that. It's deportation or violence on a nationwide scale. Choose wisely. Tick, tock, tick, tock, tick, tock. Well, on the subject of religion, Vatican City has announced a historic meeting between the Pope Francis and Patriarch Kirill, head of the Russian Orthodox Church, will take place in Cuba next week, following more than 2 years of secret talks aimed at healing ties broken nearly 1,000 years ago, according to the surprise announcement made simultaneously on Friday in Moscow and at the Vatican. Francis will make a brief stopover in Havana on February 12th before continuing on to Mexico for a six-day visit. Kirill will already be in Cuba on an official visit and will meet the pontiff for 2 hours at Havana's Jose Marti International Airport before signing a joint declaration with Francis. Well, it's going to be interesting what that's going to be about. It will be the first time in history the leader of the Catholic Church has met with a Russian patriarch. The Eastern and Western branches of Christianity split in the Great Schism of 1054. Today, there are about 1.2 billion Catholics in the world and upwards of 250 million Orthodox, and perhaps two-thirds of them are Russian Orthodox. Orthodox Christianity is made up of a number of churches largely based in Eastern Europe or the Middle East and grouped by nationality and culture and cultural traditions, as well as theology. Well, all I can say about this, I've said to my Russian friends and others that I don't trust any church or any leader of any church. And they have insisted to me that the Russian church is very pro-white and it's critical of the Jews and so forth. But I don't buy it because behind the scenes, I don't believe they're wanting to recruit as many people as they can, number one, which means that they're going to be recruiting a lot of non-white people. And I'm sure that just like in the Catholic Church in this country, in the Russian country, there's plenty of non-whites mingled into the church. So you can follow these people if you want, but I won't follow any of them. I don't trust any spooks in the sky group in the world, even if they do something good once in a while. Reason for it is they based all of their power on the false belief in a God that they don't know and they've never met and they never really have talked to. So if I was going down to get my car fixed, would I go to a beauty parlor that said, oh yeah, we fix cars on the side? I don't think so. You know, this Zika disease that's beginning to roll around South America and it's coming to the United States, and it's a deadly thing. They're not really doing anything about it other than talking about it, and definitely it's lethal and it's pandemic. But there's a Honduran cardinal warns against aborting Zika fetuses when they know that the Zika fetuses are screwed up with small brains and everything else. And, of course, so they want to make mothers and fathers keep these little monsters alive. I mean, this is the insanity of these religious people. It's the insanity, just like around here, I see quite a number of mongoloid kids that these Christians have kept alive, and they're virtually useless to society. In fact, they sort of worship them with these Special Olympics, which to me, they should be celebrating healthy people's Olympics and not these mongoloid kids. But I see them dragging them around the stores and everything. Because they were too stupid to abort them when they could. Well, now here's something that Bernie Sanders, who ostensibly was against spooks in the sky, but now presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders dashed the hopes of some non-believers when he declared that he had very strong religious and spiritual feelings at a Democratic town hall. And that, believe me, that's just another sellout to spooks in the sky. It's a guiding principle in my life. Absolutely it is. Now, I think this is the Jew coming out of him. Sanders said Wednesday, February the 3rd, when a New Hampshire voter asked him about his faith, quote, "Everyone practices religion in a different way. To me, I would not be here tonight. I would not be running for president of the United States if I did not have a very strong religious and spiritual feelings." In other words, spooks in the sky. The statement came a week after the Vermont senator told the Washington Post he is not active in any organized religion but believes in God. That statement prompted a number of pundits, atheists and otherwise, to describe Sanders as the first nun to run for president, referring to people who have no religious preference. Well, there you go. They'll all play the game for the power. And I believe a lot of them seriously get caught up in it. They feel they're evangelists, you know. Of course, Bernie Sanders is a race mixer. I mean, of course, you can't be in running for office if you're not a race mixer. Don't think that any of them, well, at least say you're a race mixer, or say it a different way. But don't say white working people. That would be bad. I haven't heard any of these bastards say white. I've heard them say the American people. They always keep talking about the American people. What the fuck do you mean, the American people? Well, that's just anybody who's standing around on this rock. Anybody. I mean, you know, whoa. Well, Bernie, shame you can't openly come out as someone who doesn't believe in spooks in the sky and still have a chance of getting elected. Well, that saves people who know the score the energy to go down to the polls.
You know, everybody practices religion in a different way. To me, I would not be here tonight. I would not be running for president of the United States if I did not have very strong religious and spiritual feelings. I believe that as a human being, the pain that one person feels, if we have children who are hungry in America, if we have elderly people who can't afford their prescription drugs, you know what? That impacts you, that impacts me. And I worry very much about a society where some people spiritually say, it doesn't matter to me, I got it, I don't care about other people. So my spirituality is that we are all in this together, and that when children go hungry, when veterans sleep out on the street, it impacts me. That's my very strong spiritual feeling.
Well, here's what the Jews say. Here's an easy way to find out if your Congress member is actually pro-Israel. Unless legislators support the boycott of Israel, it's hard to understand why they aren't supporting Senator Tom Cotton's proposed law. Let's see here. Get this straight. Now, this is from the Jewish mouth. The mouth that roared. Last spring and summer, many pro-Israel Americans were shocked to find out that their congressional representatives, despite claiming to be pro-Israel, pledged to support the nuclear Iran deal. We know how that went. Nearly all Democrats in Congress either readily agreed to abandon their commitment to global and especially Israel's security, or succumbed to an enormous pressure and ultimately caved, claiming the nuclear Iran deal, while not perfect, was worthy of their support, maybe because they didn't want to see more violence in the Middle East. That's just my opinion. Many members of Congress, unable to say with a straight face that the Iran deal was actually good, twisted themselves into pretzels trying to justify a position supporting the agreement. Given the higher priority assigned to the Iran deal by President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry, as emblematic as their political legacies, the pressures to fall in line on this vote must have been staggering. But now there is another chance for elected federal officials to demonstrate their pro-Israel bona fides, one with much lower stakes for the administration, although they won't stop it from lobbying against the proposed measure. In this case, it would be hard to understand how a legislator who claims to be pro-Israel could justify any position other than support for the bill introduced by Tom Cotton, Republican of Arizona, or maybe, he's from Arkansas, on Monday, February 1st, that is, unless one is comfortable with being cast as a hostile to Israeli Jews and more favorably disposed to Palestinian Arabs. The proposed measure of S-2474 was introduced to override this administration's latest stealth anti-Israel move, a promise to start strictly enforcing a nearly 20-year administrative agency regulation, never enforced until now, and with good reason, that bans the use of the word Israel to denote the source of origin for products produced in the disputed territories, Judea and Samaria, as those areas are called by those interested in historical accuracy. The areas are referred to and the labeling permitted as the West Bank and Gaza by those so hell-bent on enforcing the two-state solution. They're willing to overlook the fact that there is not as yet any state of Palestine, nor is the West Bank any more real a country of origin notation for the area in dispute than is Israel. Cotton's bill would amend the underlying statute to incorporate what the 1997 regulation allowed, that is, the designation for West Bank and Gaza, but it would also permit the designation of Israel for items produced in Jewish communities in those areas. What it accomplishes is throwing out a regulation, something decided upon by the administrative agencies, not elective officials, and instead incorporates the myriad regulations into comprehensive and more balanced legislation. It's a little confusing, right? Anything the Jews put out usually is. The bill was referred to on Monday to the Senate Finance Committee. So far, only a pitifully small number of U.S. senators care enough about Israel to attach their names to this legislation, which is merely an effort to prevent the U.S. from enforcing a boycott against Israel goods. And everyone who has stood up for Israel so far is a Republican. You got that, boys and girls? Well, you knew that anyhow, didn't you? That must cause you a lot of consternation out there. Some of you people are still political. As of Thursday, February 4th, three co-sponsors have joined on to the bill in addition to Cotton, who is the original sponsor. Now, all these guys are ostensibly, you know, evangelical Christians, most of them. Those three are Senator Cruz, Republican of Texas, Senator Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida, and Senator Cory Gardner, Republican of Colorado. Surprise, surprise, two of them are with the cast of many running for president. People have been claiming for some time that the Democratic Party has abandoned Israel. So far, at least, with respect to S-2474, that's true, although it's also true that not many Republicans have yet signed on either. Oh, woe be Israel. Unless legislators hear from their constituents, they may think this issue is unimportant. Israel certainly does not think so. Neither should pro-Israel Americans. So you get on the phone, get on the internet, and demand that these goyim go along with this bill, or you'll be cast into the outer darkness by the spooks. That's it for today. I'll be back Moonsday. Terrible Tommy here. Just remember, most of it is all bullshit. Sorry.